started strong.
I am. Thank you. A recovering addict named Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
And I'm not going to kid you, I'm a little bit overwhelmed. As some other people have said, I'm not a historian. I can only tell you about my experience, strength, and hope in Narcotics Anonymous. I was not one of those addicts that thought I was going to live tomorrow, so therefore I didn't save anything today. Well, even in recovery, even when I started out in recovery. So thank you to the committee, you know, and I want to thank the women. Okay. Not that I want to differentiate, because the disease of addiction does not do that. It does not discriminate. But I want to thank the women that came before me. Because there wasn't a lot that I knew of, you know, on the East Coast. So I got clean July 11th of 1980. And Jim or whoever, Danny, Kevin, anybody could tell you there was a handful of meetings in the world, 300? Was there like 300 meetings in the world at that time? I don't know. But my HP, the Divine Source of Light, decided to throw me into to recovery, and that's exactly really what happened. I didn't wake up that day and say, I'm going to get clean and serene like it says on the key tags, you know. I just went from one hell into the light, and that's exactly how I look at my recovery. I was in hell, and all of a sudden I was in light. And I ended up in this small town, Butler, Pennsylvania. And it was really scary being clean. It was. I was a fish out of water. I had many chips on my shoulder. I did, every other word was F word. I came from the streets of Philadelphia before I got to Butler. So I was a scrappy little girl. You know, I was one of those hardcore addicts on the street that there are still stories where I come from being talked about. When people that came into the rooms from my area that saw I was clean, they're like, oh my God, you're alive? We thought you were dead. You know, and it's nothing to brag about, but that's the reality of what was going on. I was not lightweight out there, and when I got into Narcotics Anonymous, I don't think I was lightweight either, but I didn't know that I wasn't lightweight. I didn't know I was hardcore. I didn't know what I was doing. And so I end up in this detox. I go to a rehab, and these are pretty significant things that I didn't realize at the time, but I go to this rehab, Endless Mountain, and since we're not by, you know, going by traditions, I'm going to talk about it, which was not that far from White Deer Run. And there was a lot of, it was called behavior modification. Okay, there was a lot of behavior modification because we were crazy. We needed discipline. I was a rebel. So I go there, you know, I go for 28 days. I don't know what's going on, you know. George was sharing about hallucination. I had hallucinations too. Thank God it was a non-medical detox and non-medical then, because they would have labeled me a bunch of labels like they do today and exploit me like they do us addicts today. And excuse me, that's how I'm going to talk. And this is my reality and this is my truth. Okay? So I would wake up and, like, the room would be like this. And I would be like, huh, something's going on with me. I'm having the flashback. I don't know what's going on. And it's like, it's okay, Bonnie. You know, go run. Go do this. So I start finding out different ways to deal with my anxiety of being clean and how to function in recovery. Okay? Didn't even know to call it recovery back then. I don't even know if I called it sober sobriety. Okay? Because I don't really remember that. So I go to this other halfway house, you know, the Butler A Center, and I'm going to tell you something about this halfway house. It's more structured than most treatment centers today, and thank God the people that were in it were recovering addicts and alcoholics, okay? And so they got me. They got me enough where there was a foundation built with some really good therapeutic information, which is what I needed. I could not go back home because my mother was my partner in crime and dope. Okay? There was nowhere else for me to go. I get out of this halfway house in January 1st of 1981, and they throw me into the community. You know? And that depends on what community. The AA community, there was like two or three meetings in Butler at the time, but you wouldn't know that they were NA meetings because it was sober, sobriety. You know, I don't even think people were using the word clean in recovery. So here I am, this street mentality person. Yes, I was raised with morals and values, but I spent a lot more time out in the street than I ever did with morals and values. So I had a mouth on me. You know, I'd go into the... Honestly, this is how it was. There was a table in the back of the meetings that we went to, and that's where the addicts sat, and we were not allowed to participate. That's my truth. So here we are. We come in, self-loathing, segregation, and we're in a place that's supposed to be spiritual. You're not allowed to talk, and you have to sit in the back of the room. Now, luckily for me, I have a mouth because I'm a northern girl. You know, I have a mouth. Now I live in the south, so I've learned how to be really polite. Okay? I'm going to share what I need to share because I've already turned it over, and what's going to come out is going to come out. So there, I wanted to participate. You know, I did. I wanted to participate. And there were some people that didn't want me to participate. And there was these two men, and they're both dead. So Bill Kaufman and Ray McCall, staunch AA members, buy the big book. Okay? Well, they saw how crazy I was. They took me under their wings. They took me under their wings, and I could. They would put me in between them, and then now I'm out in the AA community at meetings, and I was allowed to like sit there. Wasn't allowed to read, and some stupid dude made a mistake one night because I wanted to share, and I think I was talking about drugs, and it literally said to me, "What do you know? I drank more than you did in a lifetime. I probably spilt more alcohol in my tie than you drank in a freaking lifetime. I got clean when I was 25 years old, and my first husband died from a heroin overdose in my bed next to me. You want to tell me that you did that?" Like, I was like this. Boom! The table went, the chair got up, and I was going to kill this person. Okay? Honestly, there was no social. I had no social grace. I hung out with bikers from Philadelphia. Do you understand? Okay? It was like I would rather cut off your head and shit down your neck than be polite to you if you talk to me like that. You wanna bring it? Run step to it. Bring it. Okay? I was not afraid. This is AA. They didn't know what to do with me. My poor mom, I'm going to use you as an example. She would sit to me, hey, not only did my mother bring me into this world, she turned me on to my first drug, and she took me to AA. You want to talk about the birth and rebirth cycle? That's my mom. And my mom would say, Bonnie, please, please, honey, just chill out. Please calm down. Okay? So a miracle happened. People started noticing me. I wonder why. And they thought, well, there were these guys in Aliquippa that will try to turn her on to, okay? I mean, even the women in recovery. Now, I got to tell you something. There were some women that didn't even know how to masturbate. Oh, yeah. I'm like, where am I? I'm a fish out of the water. These are just facts. These are like, you know, this is, we laugh. It's facts. You know, how am I going to identify by banging dope and doing what I had to do with these people that don't even know how to masturbate? Like, give me a break. Okay? Give me a break. And then the wives would grab their husbands, okay? I'd walk in the room. Now, I didn't do anything in the room. So I swear, honestly, I was just crazy. I was just me. You take me from the street, you put me here, and I had that mentality that I had no boundaries. I had no grace. I had no surrender. I was total unmanageable. They take me down to Aliquippa, and I meet these guys, and I'm going to back up for a minute. I was in for, like, in and out for a couple years, and people in AA, I'd come in, and I'd be really tired. I'd be really anxious, and they would give me pills to calm me down. My mom would give me pills. Her friends would give me pills. So, you know, for this street addict, there was no respect about abstinence. So that, like, sober meant what? What, slowly becoming entirely ready? What? What did sober mean? Okay? Like, there is this, like, you know how there's honor among thieves? There was no honor with that fellowship for me. They had no clout in the fact of, like, what I had learned about abstinence and recovery. You don't, in treatment center, you don't use no matter what. I wasn't allowed to even take a freaking aspirin. Okay? So I meet these guys, and I kind of know that they kind of know me, and I'm kind of like, this is pretty cool. So in the Bob Stone's book, it says that we started an NA meeting in Butler, Pennsylvania in 79. I got clean in 80, so that's a typo. And I was going to both fellowships because I was scared not to. And eventually people got used to me. So this guy, you know, Bill and Ray, Bill went to California, and he, I don't know, maybe he went to the conference or went to the World Service Office. I don't really know what he did, but he came back and he told me and Timothy H. and a couple other people about, you know, you guys really need to start your own meetings. And even though there was NA meetings, it's not NA as I know it. It wasn't NA back then to what my predecessors knew it. It was AANA, you know, and which was too, I'm very literate. I didn't know that word back then. I didn't know I was literate, but I'm very literate, you know. And so it was, once again, confusing. Bill came back. He brought the white book and some other IPs, a few at the time. People know which ones were out back then. I can't remember, unfortunately. And he said, you know what? Start a meeting. You start it on time. You end it on time. You read this literature, and you be your own group in your own right. Somewhere, there's a letter from AA asking us to be our own fellowship in our own right. Correct? I don't know when that letter came out. And so they got it. I'm going to tell you how the AA community in Butler, Pennsylvania got it. As I said, we had to sit in the back of the room. Some of us identified ourselves as addicts. We started saying addicts. We started talking about drugs. The people were having fits. I get it. They have their own set of traditions, and it works really well. They paved the way for us to come. They showed us about boundaries and structure and discipline and integrity, okay? I can use those words now, but I did not know them then. And so there was a group that a lot of us would go to because the halfway house would take the van there and the addicts would go, but they weren't allowed to participate. Now I'm like in the rooms and I'm mingling and trying to function and I'm watching this. And a bunch of the really staunch AA members went and started another AA meeting. Dead winter. None of us had cars. Butler's really small. You know, you want to talk about a sense of humor. I can laugh about this. I was talking about. Butler is one of those towns that have bells to tell you the ring, okay, when you can cross, so you don't jaywalk, you cross. That's where I needed to go to start my recovery. I needed the bell to know that it was okay to cross, okay, because I would have cross-rocked, I would have done whatever. But anyhow, this meeting started up there, and they did not want addicts. And this addict came in at that time and came into that meeting. We were probably at another meeting, and they turned him away. And he went and hung himself and died. I got a message. I felt it. I felt it first before I could intellectualize it and understand the whole concept of what Narcotics Anonymous was going to be for me and those of us at the time and now. And we started meetings. And at the time, you know, Aliquippa was the area, and they used to give you a coffee pot and some literature and the white book, and we would start a meeting. And many of us did that. Not many of us. There was a handful. And I got to tell you that, you know, my ex-husband gave me a lot of pearls, and he was one of my many biggest teachers in my 31 years of recovery. And he, English major, you know, very educated. He got the concept of Narcotics Anonymous and complete abstinence and not going anywhere else. He was the first person in Butler, PA, not to go to the other fellowship. And so with that being, and we started dating, and so with that being said, there was probably like five of us that would go to NA because, you know what, most of the people drank the Kool-Aid. They did what the masses did, is what I mean by that. And understandably, people, you know, we were rebels. If you haven't heard, you know, the people, the personal stories, it was like, you know, they were paving the way. It's a movement, folks. If you haven't got that yet, Narcotics Anonymous in the late 70s and the 80s was a movement. And we didn't know it. We didn't know it. But it was a movement. I look back and think, wow, you know, we created greatness. And I was talking to Lauren, you know, if you don't get that Narcotics Anonymous has changed the world, we have changed the world, and we do it freely, enough service. We have changed people's lives. Wrap your head around it. And when you get the call for service, remember that before you say no. Okay? Because our lives depend on each other. And I got that back then. So there would be a handful of us and would sit at a meeting and people start thinking that I was crazy. And how come it's like, you know, we start traveling and I met DOA and Jim Miller and, excuse me, Jim's still alive, Jim M, Kathleen, Matt,
still alive.
And Kickin, and Sharon. And I met these people, and I'm going to tell you something. They made me feel worthwhile. They said, we need you. We're going to put a regional meeting list together. Or, we're doing this. We need you. Come. Come with us. When was the last time you said that to a newcomer? How much service work goes on now that we actually need each other to go do service? It touched my heart. It was that spiritual awakening that was going on through staying clean and recovering and showing up and planting seeds. And I started waking up. And no, I did not know at the time that NA would be what it is today, or Butler's Fellowship would get where it was going, but I just knew that all of a sudden I had a drive. You know, like that first convention you chaired, that first piece of literature? That's how it was for me, like starting meetings, you know, and sharing with women and men, sharing about recovery. I meet these guys, and they just, it was like something downloaded, and I was like on fire. And there was no longer clean and sober. It was no longer sobriety. It was Narcotics Anonymous and We're Clean. My home group was sobriety first. Aliquippa still has a meeting called the Double Bubble. So we're going down the area service, and, you know, I'm telling people, if you said anything other than clean or recovery in my group, I was calling you, it's clean. We are not sober here. This is Narcotics Anonymous. I got the concept of the disease. ODOP, one disease, one program. I got it. I don't know why I got it, but I got it. I'm sitting, but I haven't completely converted over to Narcotics Anonymous yet. I'm sitting in a meeting. My last name, I don't care, I'm going to break my anonymity, it's Fenton. There was a drug that hit the streets, a pharmaceutical, fentanyl. You know how bad I wanted to get that drug, because, you know, fentanyl, I could do the heady, trippy thing, you know, play on words, play on whatever. I just wanted to do it, because it was trippy. This is how crazy my brain is, right? I sometimes still think I get messages through the TV, by the way. And I still think that I get messages when I hear a commercial. I was just talking to one of my clients, and she, you know, was in the Peace Corps for many, many years. And she says she came out of the desert, and she's in California, and she would wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning every night for 3 nights, and it was like, come to Asheville. So we're not the only crazy ones. She picked up from California, sold everything, and moved to Asheville. We're not the only crazy ones. Other people hear those messages in the TV, too, okay? It validates that I'm not all that insane anymore. So I'm sitting at a meeting, and my sponsee, Lauren's mother, shares. And there are some people from Washington here. And her mom was a pharmacist. Guess what drug she was doing? Fentanyl. And she talked about it at an AA meeting. Lots of, about it a lot. I had my 9 months clean, and I have my first obsession. But I go home because I'm going to tell you something. It might have been talked about, but I wasn't hearing, if you feel like using or if you feel like drinking, you know, tell somebody. I didn't hear that. I'm sure it was said, but I wasn't hearing it. At that moment, I had tunnel vision. Went home, didn't talk about it, went to my home group the next day, and I can tell you this much. I sat in that meeting, and I don't know, something whispered in my ear that I needed to share it because my hands were sweaty. I'm going to be graphic. My butthole was, like, doing its thing. I could feel the belt in my mouth and tying off. And I said, I got to share. And I started sharing about exactly, I was that bold, I was calling it what it was, because after all, I was in a therapeutic community. You shared what you thought, just the way you thought it. And my sponsor leaned over and said, now, Bonnie, we don't talk about that stuff here. Mm-hmm. What's a good addict like me do? I get good and pissed off, because I can function well in my anger. My anger was constructive back then. Okay, it's not today, but it was then. I went home, I told my boyfriend, who ended up being my husband later on, and I never went back to AA. And I got the message that I needed to talk about when I felt like using, and I needed to talk about those symptoms that I sometimes had. And it was on. The movement for me with Narcotics Anonymous was on. And I'm a grunt. I like being in trenches. I still like to start meetings. My home group is Recovery by the Book, Bo transcribed, the third edition revised with all the political correct changes in it. And I have a copy, and we read it line by line. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't know the last time that you read the basic text line by line, but when you read it, you feel it. There are people who do not know one iota about the history and no personalities, and they read it and they say, I got goosebumps. And I sit there and think of the gratitude of the people before me that was driven, that sold their washer and dryer, that gave the blood or the plasma to get the printing done. And you want to talk, how can you not call this a movement? Okay? And I just get humbled to be part of such a great fellowship. And so I'm going to fast speed. Obviously, I'm a warrior. I was called a lot of names. Nazi, ranger, sheriff. I can throw them out there because if you remember, I didn't care. Because, you know, it wasn't about my ego, honestly. I was driven. There was a power greater than me. I was driven. Got to meet Kathleen. I remember the first couple times. I think the second, I met her once or twice, and the next thing I know, I'm going to Flint, Michigan, driving a stick because she was breastfeeding her child, and we're getting the kids to bring them home. I'm over at gyms. Now I'm a runner. You know, I'm jogging every day because I had to do something. I wasn't going to take drugs, so I jogged to deal with my anxiety because my last run, of course, was that crazy mess from Philadelphia. Anyhow, woo! You want to talk about dimensions? I can't tell you if you practice the 11th step, it will take you on much more deeper, realistic dimensions than any chemicals that any of us ever used. I'll plug those steps in for real. You know, honestly. So I meet Jim. Jim hands me 6 NA ways. He knows I still have them. I kept them and told me, hey, this is for light reading. Light reading. 8 NA ways for light reading before I went to sleep. You know, but these guys had their acts together. You know, they had their T's crossed and their I's dotted. They were people that you wanted to be around because they loved on you. Without taking you to bed and exploiting you. Okay? Some of the women that were in recovery back then in NA were not purists. They went to both fellowships. So I struggled with sponsorship. I had the tri-state region looking for a sponsor for me for years, and they did find me one in California. And I got to meet Bo, and I got to meet Greg, and I just felt like, you know, it was like kind of like the hippie movement, but in the NA, that you didn't have to worry about having a room because you always had a room, like George was sharing. You know, you just went places, and you knew that you were going to be okay, like you were going to be taken care of. It was the honor society, honestly. You know, it was faith. You want to talk about fear replacing faith or faith replacing fear? That's exactly what it was. Oh, let's talk about proofreading the basic text in my sobriety first group. Okay? I'm with this dude, Shannon. Anybody remembers Shannon from the region? You know, pretty cool, radical dude. We proofread the basic, the gray form. And you know what? It was like, angel singing. I heard it. I mean, I knew that something was going on. I was so limited to my language. Still can be. How do you put what this whole center, what you feel sometimes in words, because the language is so limited to share about. So I hope you're feeling me. You know, I really hope you're feeling this with me. And I said, Shannon, wow, we got to go to church. That's the only place I needed to. It was my place of worship. Like, I needed to find, you know, now I know what I was looking for, like, meditation. I was looking for a place of gratitude. But I needed, like, not just within myself. Like, I needed to go, like, an altar. You know what I mean? Like, I needed to go and just, I knew we were blessed. I knew inside that we were blessed. And anybody that knows Shannon, the church isn't his thing. And we went and we sat there and I think we held each other's hands. You know? So, you know, Jim and Mac and everybody, like, they would tell, then I get a partner, you know, Timothy H. And they would tell us, you got to do this and you got to do that. And we did all these things. And the fellowship started blooming, and the basic text came out. And I'm going to tell you about the basic text when it hit Butler, Pennsylvania. There's a woman in this room. I ended up working at this halfway house for a while that I went through that was very structured. And they would say that Narcotics Anonymous was the reinvention of the wheel. And the women that would come into this halfway house were told to stay away from me, that I was a rebel. And I don't know what else they would say. Okay? There's a woman sitting in these rooms that I've sponsored for 25 years, you know, that did not believe that. And she came back. She came off the back of a Harley and wore Harley earrings, and I asked her what that meant for her. I was able to get through. You know, with us recovering addicts or addicts, we have a window of opportunity. And if you don't take it and get that seed planted, we may be going to the funeral. And I'm one of those people, I didn't know that, and I just boom, boom, boom. And I didn't believe what they said, that we are the reinvention, okay, of the wheel. No way. This is Narcotics Anonymous, and I am forever grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am. But we evolved. Our symbol doesn't have three sides. It has four. It's no longer three, is it? Four makes it a totally different fellowship. We changed the word disease. Okay, we're powerless over the disease of addiction. And when you really read the literature and how they put it, I talked to Bo and Paige and different people who are part of it. They were divine. You don't have an education, you flunk out in English, and you're sitting writing literature? We don't do that. Source does that. And that book will stay true today. Okay? Here we go. It's coming out. So, anyhow, I got to travel around with some great people, get the region started, become, you know, I just happened to be there, be in service. When H and I went right into the jail cell in Butler, the door would close. That sound? I know, I mean, people, guys explain it, women explain when that door shuts, if there's a feeling. I didn't do any jail time. But they'd shut that door, and I'd be like, all of a sudden, you know, I didn't have fear in the street because I had my chemicals to mask it. All of a sudden, I'm in a jail cell with, I don't know what's going to jump off. But when we started reading the literature, I know I keep on saying hi. When we started reading the literature to the women addicts in there, all that fear left, and then you walk away with gratitude. You know, those are some of the positive times. 1980s and Narcotics Anonymous became a really turbulent time. It was not popular to be a Narcotics Anonymous member. It was not popular to tell people in the rooms, we are clean here. We are recovering from the disease of addiction. So I started traveling, going to meetings, and then I heard about this underground fellowship, worldwide home group called Anonymi. Probably a lot of people haven't heard of Anonymi. But that's what it stood for. Those of us who were not afraid to stand up for traditions that were ousted even in our NA community. And I was ousted in the NA community because, guess why? Because people were still sober and clean. And I refused to be sober and clean. It's like apples and oranges. They're fruits, but apple is not an orange. It's just not. I'm a recovering addict today, and that covers a lot of things. I have the disease of addiction. And let me tell you something, folks. It's not based on the drugs. Get rid of that. Once the drugs are gone, you're faced with all those behaviors. And you better be sitting in the rooms with people who know what it's like to sell your body, sell whatever it is, and be able to come right out and talk about what we do to get those things that we did. Not a legal drug, the illegal stuff. And I'm not saying anything about people that their behavior in the other fellowship, but I needed to talk about the depths that I went to. Okay? And I had people like Kathleen and Jim and Billy and Bo and Greg. This is Greg's medicine bag. Bags, I don't know if you ever heard of Greg P's story, but they used to move 3 tons of rocks when they would move. And I was at Greg's house one day, and I was talking about, because Mac told me that I needed to light a candle, and I needed to create an altar, and because I was inquiring now about the 11th step, you know, when we can't endorse things out there. So they started telling me about meditation and how to do it, and I went and saw Greg, and he threw some rocks in the medicine bag, and I've kept it ever since. And Greg P. will always be with me, because I miss Greg P. We were radical. And if you haven't seen it in personalities, but Greg was a gentle soul. And he could help me when I was so discombobulated and in the quagmire of stuff about either personalities or the world's doing this now. Can you believe it? And he would just have that calming effect on me. Because, you know, after all, not only was I a member of Narcotics Anonymous and doing service and sponsor work and getting meetings going and the literature, you know, being part of the New Lit movement, I had a kid and a husband at home. Here's where I want to talk about, well, I wanted to say something about the women. As far as I know, and I wish that Mickey was here or somebody else, Dennis. Where are you, Mick? Thanks, honey. There you go. When I would come down from Butler, I would go to Aliquippa or the region. I don't remember too many when I first came in. I know Carlita, Carmina, and Robin came. But before that, it was Dot T. And God bless Dot T's soul, but she still went to both fellowships, and I wanted Narcotics Anonymous. Okay? And like I said, Rich Jones is one to find me, my sponsor, an alternative to the world. And well, Rich went to the world. I went to West Virginia. And he told me about this woman, Kathy M. And if you ever hear this tape, Kathy M., I got to tell you something. Even though it was a long-distance relationship and you judged me to one of my great-great-grand sponsees, I listened to every word that you said. And I took direction. And even though I was in the grips of a shortcoming and you knew it, I still today remember the information that you gave me. So I moved to Florida in 1989. And what did we used to say in Pennsylvania? So, yep, work the steps or move to Florida. And there are those who know the history know the rest of that. And so I moved to Florida where those two regions, you know, there was one region, and I did not know how much information I had. Let me back up a minute. Timothy H. and I, it works how a Y manuscript comes out, right? I met Grateful Dave, too, by the way. And there's just like so much. There's so much history that of talking about the 80s. It's unbelievable. I met Grateful Dave and Danny W. when I went to the Alternative to the World and a bunch of the Staten Island crew. And I had met them because I was going to see Maggie up there, and her and John lived up there, and they were really instrumental in getting the fellowship going. You know why? I'm going to tell you why. Because this woman here, Maggie, got a lot of information from those of us in Butler and knew how to go to another area and get meetings started and continue the Narcotics Anonymous message, okay, like we do. And I may that continue to happen. And anyhow, there were some things that were going on in the world, and Billy and Jim will probably get into a lot of stuff. I just am one of those people, like some people call me the hummingbird, like I'm a connector, but because I'm a connector, I'm privy to like sitting around sometimes and listening. And I found out, like, you know, It Works Home I was being, you know, was written by this, the author, one of the writers, the first one was from AA, and I was nuts. But better than that, I was on the phone with somebody. I'm going to try to be really polite here. Was on the phone with somebody that was instrumental in the literature committee at that time who was blasted. She was really loaded. And so I had an, yes, I manipulated the situation. I asked her, directly who wrote that book, and she told me, and it was on. Me, Grateful Dave and me knowing that piece of information, police. We contact Billy, and then it was like, whew, we knew we had the information. So those guys go, and they know what to do with it because they're so informed, and they got all their ducks in a row, and I'm just like nuts, you know. I'm not a closer. I'm a canvasser. I get to tell you the information. You know what I mean? I get to tell the information, and then the people that are smarter and more together get to do what they do and prove it with the facts. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Okay? And so, oh gosh, there was a quarterly meeting. And anyhow, I end up, I don't know if it was Jim, I don't know if it was Billy, but somebody, I don't know if it was just Source, but I know I have to get to the conference and talk to Leah and talk to some, you know, Bob Stone and some other people to tell them this piece of information that was said to me over the phone. I need to know. First of all, I needed to talk to Leah because she sponsored her so that she could help this woman get back in the rooms. That was really my driving point. And then the rest was the whole Lit movement. So I go to a peace march in Washington, D.C., and arrive in California for the conference. And there's Jim, and there's Bo, and there's all my, you know, all my crew. And all of a sudden, there's Doug F. around me, and there's some of these California people around me, and Jim and Bo are like this. You see that dude over there? He's a self-incarnated. Stay away from him. What do you think I do? And Mesh, I need to find out some things. And I'm really grateful that I did that because I got to hear the side of California who didn't like the changes that were happening in the white book, and they were Jimmy's sponsees, and I met some other guys, Pepe, and all. I met some really cool California people, and all of a sudden, guess what I felt? I felt that I was in between two divorced parents. There was the West Coast and the East Coast. And somewhere in the middle, I had to figure this out. Now, I got to tell you, I've been to some places where Betty was at, and Greg, you know, Greg got blamed for that whole thing that you heard today about locking Jimmy out of the office. Greg died. Greg died without knowing the truth had come out. Okay? Greg would tell me the story, and that was heavy on his heart. Okay? About locking Jimmy out. That was his sponsor, and that was heavy on his heart, you know. And this is the type of person I get with you. Like, if we would all go out to dinner and there would be 20 conversations, I'm still got that speed freak shit about me. Like, I'd be caught up and know and be part of all those different conversations. But I might be in a really intimate conversation with you, Danny, and then I would come back and say, you know what, I need to focus. I need to be present. So we have that heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul connection, okay? And I finally got there, thank God, with the 11th step that helped me to get grounded and connect. So, you know, I could just tell stories, but I go to that conference, and I'm flipping, and I go, I didn't know that you weren't allowed to go up and talk to the RSRs and go up and talk to the chair. They're taking me, because they're walking me back to the peanut gallery. And I'm like, you know, I'm used to Jim and them letting Bonnie do whatever she wanted to do. They'd be like, this is Bonnie, it's okay, she's from Butler. She's got her heart in the right place. You know, we'll send her, she'll go, and then we can come in and do what we needed to do. You know, I would set it up for them. No, sometimes, but not really, but... You know, but sometimes, yeah. And evidently what happened was they threw people's names in the hat, and members at large or some members in the hat to be on the World Lit, and my name got pulled out. And here's how it was back in our region. You want to talk about integrity and following the service structure? My region did not nominate me to be on World Lit, and therefore they were not going to second that motion. Somebody else seconded it, and I was in. And you want to know something? This is some junkie from the street that when she got into Narcotics Anonymous could not say the word anonymity or say the ABCs because my brains were so scrambled. And now I've arrived on World Lit. And if it wasn't for Jimmy and Dale and Rich and Mickey and, you know, different people that just took me in and they saw what we were, me and Timothy were doing in Butler. And let me tell you, Butler was a very and still a very unique situation because I'd come down to Pittsburgh and call them a lot. Because now they started the home improvement business and was bringing that dope fiend shit in rooms. And I wasn't having it at all. And I would call it out. I would call it out. You know, you're in the greed and you're in the lust and you're in the, who cares about gold? What are you doing? You know, I was just that micromanaged in my head because of therapeutic stuff. And I'm going to tell you one thing else that it stayed with me, and then I think I need to let Guido share here. So I moved to Florida. I get very active. The region split. I'm a warrior. You got to understand. I go to Florida and they're doing H&I with spiritual tapes. Never seen a service manual. Okay, and I'm like, you haven't seen the guidelines, the H&I guidelines. Like, what are you doing here? And it's on. And then the petition to throw me out of Narcotics Anonymous happened. A little. Yeah, because I told everybody that was there that they were wrong, and this is not how you do it. And I, you know, I earn these reputations, you know. I got to tell you today, in Asheville, North Carolina, I am not the crazy rebel person. I kind of have sat there for 6 years and watched what's going on, and I understand it's not their fault and that the whole service structure has flipped upside down, and I don't really know what I'm going to do or where I'm going to go and how I'm going to do it, but I do know I have a home group, Recovery by the Book, and we study the third edition revised. And here's something else I'm going to share with you. Because of my education through treatment up north, there was a couple, Dick and Kathy, that moved from Williamsport or wherever they were from to Florida, and they were really heavily involved in treatment centers, and they know me. They knew of me. Where is it?
Williamsburg.
Right, thank you.
They lived in Harrisburg.
Harrisburg, thank you. And yeah, my first conference that Timothy and I went to, we had nowhere to go, nowhere to stay. We stayed with Billy and Bob McKendrick, you know. And another, like, big dad, you know, big brother is big dads to me, and that filled my head with a lot of information. So, anyhow, I was sought out to clean up a treatment center's substance abuse center and side of the treatment center. Because of my knowledge of Narcotics Anonymous and I know about abstinence, they knew I could go in there and do that. And I did do that. But I want to tell you what I learned. Okay? I worked my way up in that place and got into a pretty cool position that I was privy to hear information, you know, about how the insurance companies work. Okay? So you go to a treatment center, you send your kid, you go to yourself, you send your mother, grandmother, I don't know. Okay? And they can't fit in under the substance abuse label because their insurance got a glitch in it or they did it a year ago or whatever. They have this book called the DSM with all this mental health diagnosis in it. So they already have the intake. What can you fit? And what label can we? So then your addiction, your substance abuse, what they call it, goes secondary, and your mental health goes first. And then what comes with that is the prescriptions, because legally, if they diagnose you, you have to take the medication, or you're a liability. And so then you are on medication, and you believe your labels. Okay? I'm grateful I left that job because of my integrity, because I ended up on national TV taking care of somebody, and people that know me from all over the place were like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? And it smacked me in the face. And that I cannot be part of that process. Okay? I can tell you that in 31 years, okay, I have not used a chemical. I have had several breakdowns. I have ended up in a closet in a fetal position, remembering when I was left as a baby in a crib and my mom and dad were all using, and I never picked up a chemical to deal with it, that I came to the members of Narcotics Anonymous, and the women and the men, they helped me if I let them. They walked me through it just like I was a newcomer and told me to keep coming back. I sponsored women. I went to meetings, got loved in Narcotics Anonymous without the use of chemicals. And if you're not pissed off that drug replacement is in the basic text, you are all freaking nuts. Okay? Nuts. Because I'm living proof that you can do it. I'm not going to tell you if you're on meds, get off of it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying for me, I went through a lot of things. And if it wasn't for the foundation and me and Source and the people that came before me that told me that I could do it and loved me, were there and helped me. And I've had it recently. Last year I was going through a little bit of stuff. And it wasn't for them, the people before us working the steps that knew about selfless service. We learn, I learn, and continue to pass it on about what service is here. It's a gift. And I'm pissed off that it's being taken away from us. Okay? On many levels. And you might not understand it. Those who understand it know. And those who don't know will understand it, because you'll hear a lot more. The 80s were crazy. I survived it. We survived it. A lot of good things happened from it. Those people that you may think that are radicals, okay, and the Nazis even still today, you got to listen to the message. I don't give a shit about the personality. Bo gets accused of doing so much stuff, and Bo's one of my best, he's another gentle giant, you know, that continues. You know what he does? Well, I'm going to share about Bo. You know, people, Bo's a philosopher. He did a lot of LSD, for crying out loud. Okay? He's a philosopher. He's a writer. But when you get Bo fed and calm and centered, okay, he is right on. He knows to organize. He continues to write. Okay? Yes, he's gone out of the service structure. Well, why wouldn't you? Gone out of the service structure and continues to write the literature that will continue to be there, you know, if and when this corporation fails and falls apart. There are people, trust me, the Phoenix is here. You can't do anything to the fellowship, and here's what I've learned, okay? Here's what I've learned. We are the fellowship. When that baby Blue came out, I'm going to tell you, I talked to Billy, I talked to Grateful Day, there were some other people. Here's the thing about us women in Narcotics Anonymous, okay? I'm going to share that, and then I think I'm going to close. I said that before, but I'm listening. I'm driven here. It's still, I'm the only woman speaker this weekend. What does that say? Okay, I'm not making this up. My ego's not in it. This is very humbling for me. I'm, like I said, I'm not a historian. I'm jumping all over the place. Okay? Even today when you get into circles that Kathleen and I can share about this, because I asked her, she felt it. And please, those in the room, please don't be offensive by this. But we were there too. Okay? And we might have been taking care of the kids in the corner, okay, and making sure that they were getting to school the next day and doing all these things. And we're still, like, when I try to jockey in between things, like, me and Grateful Day went to this quarterly meeting and we confronted Jack B, and you know, and it's like, no, me and Grateful Day, we did this, you know, and it's like, you know, I earned my right to be here, okay? I earned my right to be here. So as women in recovery, there's not a whole lot who've stayed. There were a lot of women who were asked to speak, and they didn't come. We made a significant difference. I don't go to special interest groups, okay? I needed to hear what it was like for a man to be raped in prison so that him and I could identify and help each other work our way back out into recovery and forgiveness and grace, okay? And if it wasn't for open meetings, I wouldn't have known about that man being raped in prison who helped me deal with my own exploitation of selling myself out there. This is Narcotics Anonymous. We are the fellowship. People aren't going to... What professional writer is going to put the emotion of that in their writing? Unless they have recovery and that spirit. Okay? So, we're not second to anybody. We're just not second to anybody. And in the true who I am, you know, I talk to people in the other fellowship because there's people in the AA that are coming into NA. Okay, they want to deal with their substance abuse issues. Okay, or they're just coming. Who knows why Spirit's driving them? And I talk to them. We talk about traditions. Okay, and they're using our language, and that's what I was sharing. You know, I have grace today. It might not have seemed like I had grace but truly I have grace, and I can come from my heart. And I believe so much in the divine source of life that I'm going to touch that in you. And so when I share to people how important it is to use clean in recovery so that no addict ever need to die because of not hearing that, okay, and not hearing the religious rhetoric, it makes a difference and people do it. This is the first line of structure that I ever had in my life. This is my life. Narcotics Anonymous is my heart, just like sponsorship is the heartbeat of Narcotics Anonymous. I just was grateful that I was asked to participate, you know. And so the 80s were crazy, but we survived it. And, you know, there's some literature that's acknowledged or some literature that's not acknowledged. And I beg you to find out, because there are people that are still here that was part of it, to find out why. Why? Find out the facts. Mike. Young Mike, and I call him Mike R. right here, you know, is a worth world. I mean, he's encyclopedia. Danny and his collection. If you haven't heard the history, we fought hard. Addicts died. Okay? My first daughter, when I had her, she's 27 years old. 28, excuse me. And, you know, when I had her and I held her, as a mother does, I didn't look down at her and say, oh, someday she's going to be an addict. Okay? But at 14 years old, okay, when she had her first run as I was at a convention, I had a spiritual awakening that rocked my soul. And the spiritual awakening was, yes, I did service work because that's what I was told to do, and I was driven by the purity of our language. And at that moment, when she picked up and I knew she was an addict, I knew exactly why. It's for the people that go behind us. Okay? And it happens to be my daughter, who's now clean 2 years. Okay? Big, huge, not little stuff. So, thank you for the 80s. Thank you for asking me to participate. Thank you for challenging me. You know, thank you. All right, against all odds, this girl from Beachview, in South Hills, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is in Narcotics Anonymous 31 years later, and I'll never change the recipe because the recipe works just the way it is. We've only begun again. Rebirth that service structure and make all of you able to serve on whatever committee. Come on in and participate and don't make it so rigid and close us out, because you're going to have kids and grandkids, and we need that message of Narcotics Anonymous to be don't use no matter what, and you can do it, and we need to be the examples. Okay? We need to be the examples. And women, I want to share something. If you're sitting in your women's group and you're just keeping your stuff there, you better come out here if you want to have a relationship with men so they can understand your pain so they can recover too. And men, if you're sitting in the men's group and you're only sharing with your good old buddies at the circle jerk, please come and tell us about it, because we need to know about it. Okay? We need to know about that stuff. I need to understand you guys. Okay, and that's Narcotics Anonymous. That's the Narcotics Anonymous that I grew up in the 80s. Okay, that's the message. Get a home group, get a sponsor, work the steps, and serve on whatever level. Open a meeting, close a meeting. Okay, all this other stuff that goes on. And I've been privy enough to be around the most controversial stuff in Narcotics Anonymous, the copyright law, which I believe Billy's going to talk about. You know? And you think the baby blue was crazy. That's what I wanted to share with you, and I am closing. Only because it's going to make, like, perfect sense now. So I go to a peace march in D.C. and go to my first conference. So check this out. You know, they wanted to do something in the service structure because we knew that the office was, you know, corporation. And we know what. Do we know what corporations do now? What do? Make money, right? We don't make money here. We save lives here. we recover here, right? Okay, so there's a conflict of interest, right? Spiritual principles, you know, conflict. They're never in conflict, right? My idea was, and at the time we could have done it, my idea, coming out of Moth Babes, you know, I'm going to get rid of the resentment and then I'm closing, okay? And maybe somebody can tell me afterwards, you know, they could pat me on the head like they've done for a long time, you know. And I'll either listen or I'll continue on what I do, because I'm connected to source most of the time, or I'm humiliated. I thought that there was enough smart addicts in the rooms at the time that we could have went to California, walked in the office, and took it over. Okay? And I still believe. I don't think we can do it now. I don't know if we can. I think it has to start. God bless Joseph, who him and I had the same idea of you start within the structure. You don't go outside the rooms. I don't know if I believe that anymore. I don't know. I'm not committed totally. I wish that we would have went into the office and took it over. The reality is, of life and history, would we have made a difference or would we have created the same mistakes in just a different way? Let it be our lesson in whatever way we can and continue to recover in Narcotics Anonymous, where total abstinence is the priority, is the message. Thank you for asking me to share here. Yeah.